Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hello there, Second Captains listeners. Owen McDevitt here with a special show for you today. Every now and again, we like to treat all you non-members to a full episode from the World Service, just to give you a sense of the kind of stuff we're able to do because of the support of our members, and also to give certain stories as much exposure as possible. This is one of those stories that deserves all the coverage it can get. All we ask in return is that you consider adding your own support by becoming a member on secondcaptains.com. It costs €5 a month plus VAT to join, and there's no minimum contract beyond the first month. So here's our piece on the Afghanistan women's football team. It first went out on Friday on the Second Captain's World Service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
It's a special episode of the Second Captain's podcast for you today. Don't worry, you will still have your two Friday afternoon regular slots, my weekly thank you. And I know you couldn't go right through your weekend without that. And Francis Murphy's Guide to the Weekend Sport on Television, which is a proper public service, let's be fair. So we will do both of those at the end.
But we're honoured to help in any way that we can.
Aside from that, it's a one-topic show today based on a story we first came across a few weeks ago when we were looking into the situation in Afghanistan. This was in preparation for a radio interview we did with the BBC's Orla Gear. And you said at the time, Murph, this is a story that deserves the full cinema treatment at some point. We don't have the time or the resources to turn around an entire movie production, but we are going to have a really good chat with two amazing women, and everybody is welcome to the podcast. Hope your Fridays are going okay so far. This story, just to set it out a little bit, surrounds the Afghanistan national women's football team and their fleeing of the country in the wake of the Taliban returning to power. Just by the very act of playing the game, these women were a symbol of resistance against the values of the new regime. On top of that, though, some of the players were well known as being vocal activists for women's rights, so they were seen as especially vulnerable as stories emerged of the Taliban knocking on doors, hunting people down, and so on. And this is where the first of our guests, Khalida Popal, comes in. She's the former captain and one of the founders of the national team. She had to flee the country herself 10 years ago because of how dangerous it was even then to do what she was doing. Khalida, in a few weeks when the Taliban returned to power, she started fielding calls from current players pleading with her for help, really distraught calls. She had to tell them to hide evidence that they played football, burn the jerseys.
Delete the social media, their social media accounts. Yeah, it's a
burning the jerseys
story.
was a big one because, you know, they took such pride in wearing those jerseys, and she was instrumental in founding the team and the amount of emotional investment in that. And then it's like you actually have to burn these, you know, rather than
disavow all of the work that you've done. Yeah,
incredible.
It's unbelievable.
So from there, she set about trying to get them out of the country with the help of our second guest, Kat Craig, a human rights lawyer who works with FIFPro. That's the International Players Union. So Khalida and Kat and one or two others, including the team manager, Kelly Lindsay, they put together a plan that involved, I was about to call it an audacious plan, which just sounds so, really does sound like we're going into movie trailer territory at that point, but it's hard to avoid that word. It was incredible, really. They put together this plan that involved, amongst other things, tracking the movements of the Taliban and military personnel on the ground. They also, in a broader sense, they garnered support in the Australian government. And anyway, they ultimately managed to get somewhere between 100 and 200 people out of the country, including the footballers and some of their family members. Now, I need you to cast your mind back here. I know the news cycle moves on and we all, images we think will be ingrained in our heads forever, all often are gone 24 hours later. But just think of the images from that time, people losing their lives, clinging to airplanes, the suicide bombing at the airport, all of that was in play. And yet somehow between the determination of their former captain and the desperation of the players themselves, many of them teenagers, they found a way out. And that's the cinematic element, Murph, although we are talking about real lives here. I can see where you were going with that by saying there's a movie in it, certainly.
Yeah, and you know, it's you know, there's a movie in it, kind of, there's nearly an offhand nature to that remark, but oh my God, like, just the drama of that over the course of, and we're not talking like a huge span of time either here, obviously, as we all know, the collapse of
so
the,
fast,
yeah, like yeah. The rush to power of the Taliban in Afghanistan happened so fast that you are talking about, you know, literally hours making the difference, minutes making the difference in how quickly our two guests and a couple of other people, you know, got the show on the road, got their act together, and managed to get basically save people's lives. I don't think it's any exaggeration to say
lives,
that.
Yeah.
That the people that they got out, if they had stayed in the country, their lives were in grave danger. So it's an unbelievable story, absolutely unbelievable story. And it's a pleasure to have Kat and Khalida on the show today.
It doesn't stop there. Just to mention, Khalida's been trying to help many more people out. She's been helping as many people as she can. There's an Afghan girls development squad currently on temporary visas in Pakistan. I saw this week the British government is being petitioned to grant them asylum, and Leeds United have apparently got involved. They've offered to sponsor these girls, offering them further education and academy scholarship at Leeds youth development teams and this sort of thing. So just to bring you up to speed on that, this is really an ongoing story, even though these women have pulled off so much already. So here's the chat.
Fair to say anybody could have managed those guys?
No, of course not.
He's about 12. Everyone in the city knew about him, but no one had seen him.
Look how happy I was. What the fuck happened? No, really. What happened?
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Well, back in August, as the Taliban came to power again in Afghanistan, the women's national football team were among a group of people who managed to get out of the country thanks to the incredible efforts of a small group of people, including our two guests today. Khalida Popal is former captain and one of the founders of the Afghanistan women's football team. Khalida, how are you?
Thank you, I'm good.
Thanks so much for talking to us. And Kat Craig is a human rights lawyer working for FIFPro. Kat, thanks very much for taking the time today.
Thanks for taking the time to cover the topic.
No, I'm really interested. I mean, this is just, it's absolutely mind-blowing, to be honest. Khalida, maybe the best thing to do, first of all, is just explain a little bit about the Afghan women's football team, what the team represents, I guess. Why did you set it up back in 2007?
I mean, the foundation of Afghanistan women's national team was based on sort of an activism in Afghanistan and a change of a culture through football. In the purpose, the main purpose of Afghanistan women's football was to stand together as a united front, to be the voice for our voiceless sisters that they were still living under the regime of Taliban in the rural areas of Afghanistan, and also to change the mindset that Taliban has changed in our country for the period, long period of their regime in Afghanistan, where they vanished women from the society, where they isolated women, the half of population, and set them at home, where the society was even not seeing women outside, and they took the right of education, right of freedom, and everything from women. So we came as a team together once the Taliban lost the control in Kabul, came together to change the mindset as a new generation of Afghanistan, a generation of hope.
So you suffered from all that yourself, Khalida, in the 1990s. You were a kid growing up when the Taliban came to power in the 90s.
Yes, that is true. And unfortunately, my childhood is repeating again before my eyes. And it's traumatizing to see what is happening back in my country. After all the years of dedication, work and development, it's once again back to square one and back to my childhood, where I experience and see and read the news the women cannot go to school anymore. They don't have the right to go to work, to have freedom, and to play sport, any sport that they like to.
Yeah, and I mean, sport. Your mom was a PE teacher. I read that. Is that right?
That's true. My mom is the person who actually brought me into sport, introduced me to sport, and now my mom and like the people like my mother, now they have lost the freedom to go to school and educate people, and all their work is just gone.
Can you describe for us the feeling you had then when you founded this football team and when you played your first match, when you put on the jersey of your national team? What was the feeling?
We have been through a lot with as the women of Afghanistan, especially the football players, because we stood up very strong in a very young age to change the mindset, to change the culture, as I said before. As like we were a natural way of activists, and we become like an activist in a very natural way without having any training. We stood up together to stand for our right, to say that we are visible, we are women of Afghanistan, and we are half of the population. And we took football as a tool to raise that awareness and stand for each other. We have been through a lot as a team. We faced a lot of challenges. Changing the mindset and the culture is not easy and has never been easy to any cultures, in any cultures. And we have given a lot of sacrifices in so many levels, and also including our families. They have been through a lot just to who have been supporting us. But when we earned that jersey, the right to wear the jersey of Afghanistan women's national team, to have the badge on our chest, to stand for our right, to represent our country, that was the most beautiful, amazing moment in my life. And in our life also, because that is like, we have been through a lot where nobody trusted us. They were all standing in front of us. They were saying, you should not play sports. You should not play football. And it's not for women. And you belong to kitchen. And all of a sudden, you are, after a long time of fight, you earn that. And that is the most beautiful thing. When I think about it, if we were playing in World Cup, we wouldn't have the same feeling. The feeling was the best moment in our life because we stood up, we proved it, and we actually become the role models for so many young girls and even men that we are strong and we believe in our fight and we are standing there and we are making change. We are the new face of Afghanistan, the face of new generation, the face of a strong woman of Afghanistan. And that was the greatest moment when we hear the national anthem played for us. We saw the beautiful colors of our flag. And representing our country was the most beautiful thing.
You've mentioned a couple of times the opposition that you've had. Was that even after the Taliban were out of power and you set up the football team? Did you continue to face opposition? Did you continue to face people trying to shut this thing down?
Yes, it was not, the Taliban wasn't only our enemy. There was, they like, we are talking about the generation that lived under the Taliban regime, for a generation that were grown up in the war-torn country, where, for example, 8 years or 9 years of war, especially in Kabul, where they were killed even if they were watching TV or listening to music. So the country was kept, and the generations were kept away from having access to education, to awareness. They were not used to see women. And all of a sudden, what all they see is the young women standing and looking different, and they are stronger, and they are playing football. This was too much for even men and women who lived under the regime of Taliban, who saw the culture differently. So that was the mindset we were actually against, and we were trying to change it through football, by being visible, by being bold, by being standing together and being loud.
Kat, I'll bring you in here because I think it's pretty clear the way Khalida talks about what that team represented. I mean, these would have been seen as women, people who were in danger because of the Taliban returning. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, Owen. And I think, I mean, I've heard Khalida speak about this over the years, and we've worked together for some time now, and it never ceases to amaze me when I hear these stories of such resilience and strength and courage It's really difficult, I think, for us outside of the country to understand just how intense the opposition was to this culture and this opportunity that Khalida and her team built. And that was very apparent early on when the Taliban retook Kabul, and Khalida and I were speaking with others in the team, and we realized that early doors, these women were going to be targeted, and there was a risk from members of the community who were perhaps more traditionalist and had already expressed opposition. And as the Taliban came into the city, there were different responses to that, right? There were people who were very vehemently opposed to it, but there were also those who were perhaps less opposed. And we knew that there was a risk that the whereabouts and the identities of these women would be leaked. And in fact, then very soon we started hearing stories of direct threats. So absolutely, that backdrop that Khalida has painted so well demonstrates how football became so much more than just a sport, and how courageous these women were, and how great the risk was that they faced.
How did you begin that process? I say begin that process as though it's something that happened over a long period of time. We're talking about a couple of days, I think, that you have to get these women out of there. So how did you begin to make that happen?
Well, I'll pass it back to Khalida in a second, because really she's been the heart and soul of all of these missions. I would only say that I think it's right to continue this reflection on the role of the players themselves, right? Mm. Khalida, it was a tough process for them, and they saved themselves. There was a very small role played by myself and others trying to support Khalida logistically. You know, we've spoken about this a couple of times, and the reality is that what really happened is we didn't sleep very much, and we wandered around in our tracksuit bottoms in our house, constantly WhatsApping each other and writing endless spreadsheets and emails. So that was the sum total of my not terribly glamorous role. So I'll pass back to Khalida, who can tell you more about really the strategy and the political efforts that she made behind the scenes.
Kat is being very humble. She is a great, she has been playing a great role in supporting us and supporting me, especially in the past many years now. So it's not the first time. Like, to add on what Kat said, that when the government of Afghanistan surrendered, we knew that there are few players that are really in great danger. Of course, especially the national team of Afghanistan, because they have been very vocal. They're activists. They have been very, very known in the country. So it all started like being worried and calling them and writing them and saying, how are you doing? And what we received was like voice messages, desperately seeking for protection, for help. And that is actually them who raised their voices. I have been sitting in Denmark, a perfectly beautiful country, just being, of course, sorry and sad for my country. But that is actually the players who said, we need help, do something for us. And on that moment, I felt very responsible. Like, how can I just, I have so much information and these voices seeking for help and protection. How can we help them? Knowing that we don't have the power, the people I know, my friends and the people I'm working with, my team, they don't have the plane to send to Afghanistan. None of us have a lot of money and a lot of power in government. And the only way was like how we can raise the voice and say like, we need the help and the support. And of course, other people from FIFPro, that was the only organization actually reached out, the good friends from FIFPro, asking how they can help. And the only thing I kept saying that we don't know, actually, we don't know how to get the girls out because the country is shut down. But they have facilitated, they have helped us to help the girls. And it is actually the power of voices. They have been using their voice to save themselves, and we have been using our voice to get support for them. And this is how we come together, and we have been very successful. Unfortunately, great organizations, governing bodies were not taking action in the right time, but we did everything possible. We put our gears on. We didn't know actually we are playing against Manchester United or Chelsea, This was actually a football game, and we were at grassroots level because none of us know how to rescue, get people from Afghanistan out when the Taliban is leading the country. But we didn't lose the fight, and we stood up together and supported the girls that they needed the help. And that's why we have been successful.
Ultimately, Kat, this involved the Australian government involved. I suppose that they were the big political drivers of it, involved some people on the ground in Afghanistan. Can you sort of just outline, as succinctly as possible, that process for getting them out?
Yeah, I think Khalid has touched on a really important point here, was that it was a lot of kind of, it started with this moment where we all said, what can we do? And we got together with Jonas, who's the general secretary from FIFPRO, and we all decided we should give it a shot. We didn't know how, but we wanted to give it a shot. And that's what happens when you work with people like Khalida and Kelly, who's, you know, a champion footballer, is that when you work with these elite athletes, they know that they can always, there's always a chance that they'll win, right? That's the thing that I love about working with, that you've always got a chance, even if it's small. So, look, we had a bit of a scattergun approach, and that was intentional. We worked through all our different political contacts at different levels, through the player unions, through politicians we may know. We were scanning media because it was unexpected, right? All the governments were also just trying to figure out what they were going to do. So we were scanning media to see who was potentially expressing some sympathetic messages towards women's rights activists and concern about what would happen to people in the country. And Australia was not on our radar, in all honesty, right? Neither was the UK at the moment. My government has a horrific anti-immigration policy. Australia hasn't always been particularly welcoming either. And so this came a little bit out of the blue, but thanks to a couple of, I think, key individuals in the country, former footballers there, Craig Foster, Nicky Dryden, who's a former Olympian, and there was a minister in Australia who's a former Olympian herself, and she managed to get the cogs moving behind the scenes. So that then, together with immigration lawyers on the ground, Ali Battison in particular, we managed to just file phenomenal amounts of asylum applications. That gave us what was early doors, Khalida, was the golden letter, wasn't it? It was a letter from Zali Steggall, the minister, saying an application has been filed. And early on, that got you through the Western checkpoints into the airport. And that's how the first tranche of players got through. But for sure, we also worked our various contacts. Hayley Carter, who was the assistant coach to Kelly and Khalida in Afghanistan, she's a former Marine. She was able to work her contacts in the US. There was also British troops on the ground. I was trying to find a contact there, and the Australians. So we had, you know, really quite courageous people on the ground in really, really difficult circumstances who had heard the message and heard the call for help and got the women out. But really, the stuff that is difficult to think back to, and I'm sure, Khalida, it's hard for you more than anybody because you were on the phone to people, but you shared with me messages of some of the young women trying to get through the Taliban checkpoints, which involved very high risks of physical violence, trying to get through these. I mean, there's photographs of thousands and thousands of people queuing to get into the airport. People were shot at, they were beaten with cattle prods, they were whipped. And Khalida and Kelly were able to kind of channel that message of perseverance to these young women who were having to fight through to get to the front of the queue, then cross open sewers to try and get into the airport. So again, it was a real testament to their strength and resilience and also Khalida's good humor throughout this all. I've learned about this working with Khalida, is that, you know, no matter how grim the topic and how difficult the times are, she's always got a great one-liner or kind of, you know, words of encouragement. And at one point she said, you know, get your biggest defender and your quickest winger and try and get to the front of this queue. You just need to get one person to the front to tell the American troops or the Australian troops or the British troops that you're there, and then we can try and get the rest of you in. So they were coached through it and, you know, they were champions in getting to the front of that queue and getting out.
It sounds like just such a horrendous experience for those women, Khalida.
Yes, they are champions, as Kat said. They are strong women. What they have been through, 3 nights they were at the airport. They have been through a lot. It was toughest time. They didn't eat, they didn't sleep. They were just out there trying and fighting so hard to manage to get through the Taliban checkpoints. They were beaten. It was just the only thing that kept them together is that, I mean, great quotes and great messages that I have learned from Kaylee Lindsay, who are the coach on that time. And I was sitting at home having the phone and sending voice messages at 3 a.m. Denmark time, coaching them and trying to encourage them to stay strong and not give up. That was the toughest. That was the toughest in my experience, like coach someone from miles, miles away from where you are in a crisis where they are young girls in the age of 16, 17. And some of them, they left their families behind and they are worried and they are in front of the Taliban that we always call as our enemy. And they have very little or no energy left on their feet to stand on their feet. But telling them to stay strong, stay as a team together, fight. And there's only one way to win is to get yourself to the gate or to the first soldiers who are not Taliban, but like one of the soldiers, foreign soldiers. That was the message. That was the motivation. We are going to win this. It's a cup. We are going to win the cup. And we are playing in the final. We are not giving up. We are not weak. And we will win. We don't like losing. That was the motivation. And I didn't know how to actually coach them. But that was the only thing I had. That was my voice sending them, my voice messages to encourage them to not give up.
I'm glad you mentioned the families there, because this is something that occurred to me when I was watching this story unfold, was the best case scenario for people who needed to get out of Afghanistan was that they got out of there. But even in that scenario, they're leaving members, they're leaving friends behind, I'm sure. They're leaving family members behind, which is the biggest thing. So it must be so conflicting for these people who are getting out. And, you know, it's an amazing story. And what you guys helped to achieve is incredible. But they're also then having to leave behind those family members, which must be so tough for them, Khalida.
I remember when I had to leave Afghanistan, how tough was it for me to make that call and say, like, even not being able to say goodbye to my family. And I knew that what the players are going through is the toughest moment in life when you don't know actually you can return back home. It's just so tough. But like a situation like this, I didn't want to make a call and I did everything possible to not make that call. But at the end, we had to make that call because to save the players. And I told them, listen, I'm sorry to making this call. Some of you, or like most of you, have to leave your family behind because you cannot cross the crowd. If you get your old mom or who is sick or the brother who is not able to push herself or your kid or the kids in the family, save yourself first and you make a decision. Because otherwise you cannot make it. You cannot make it to the front line. And that was the most difficult for me because it was repeating the moments in my life, leaving my family behind.
Why did you leave your family behind? Why did you leave your family? And as you said to us there, you weren't even able to tell them that you were leaving them behind.
Because of the death threats I was receiving in, because my life was so difficult and risky for me to continue living in Afghanistan. To be able to save my life and also save my family's life, I had to leave my country. It was the toughest decision I had to leave behind, just because that is the cost of activism in those countries. When you're an activist, that is the cost you pay. It's not easy. You have to pay a lot, and that's what I paid. And I didn't want to make that, but unfortunately, it turned out that they had to leave their families behind. And there are some of them, they are very young people that they had to make that call.
No, many of them were able to bring some family members because of Khalida. I mean, I remember we had a conversation early on. We had no idea how many people we would get out, whether it would be 1, 2, 20. I didn't know if we would be able to help anybody, but I knew that it was going to be really hard to bring adult dependence. You know, if you are over 18 in most jurisdictions and you travel as a refugee, you know, if you have a kid, yes, they can usually come with you, or a spouse, they can come with you. But your parents, your siblings, adult siblings, aunts, uncles. Also, the concept of family is different in Afghanistan. It's a much wider, less nuclear family. And I kept saying to Khalida, we said to them, we can try and get you out. We'll do our best. We don't know what will happen. And then, but we can't, you know, we don't think we'll be able to help your family. And Khalida pushed back rightly to me, right? And they turned up. I know when they turned up initially, lots of them turned up with their family. And Khalida and I were talking and I was getting more and more stressed, thinking, you know, if too many of them arrive, then we'll definitely not get anybody through. But Khalida fought for them. And I really admire that, Khalida, particularly in light of the sacrifices you made. She pushed back hard and said, you know, let them try, let them see what happens. And yes, it is really, really difficult. Many of them will now be having to rebuild their lives away from their family, feeling that sense of guilt. But because of Khalida and because of the women's own tenacity, right, and their families, some of their families were able to make it through. So the group that made it to Australia included a reasonable number of family members, direct family members, and similarly with others. I think certainly the younger players have been able to bring at least a care or parents in most circumstances. But it's brutal, and it's brutal to have to rebuild your life now in a new country. You know, people often look at these situations and think it's so horrible for women in Afghanistan. They must be delighted and grateful that they're now somewhere else where they can play freely. And I don't think that's people's experience, right? People miss their home. People miss their family. They look back and their country is burning. These aren't moments where they rejoice. I'm sure some people feel glad that they will be able to play football to a certain degree and live their lives in a different way. But I think there's a lot still for them to overcome and go through. And they will need support as they rebuild their lives in new countries.
Yeah, I mean, nobody should have to flee their country just to have those freedoms, I guess, is the bottom line there. Khalida, what is it like, do you know, for people in particularly women in Afghanistan now? I mean, we were told there was a bit of a PR offensive by the Taliban coming back into power that it would be more moderate this time and there would be potentially more rights for women. But has that been the case so far?
I mean, that has been very open and they have been very vocal about it. The first thing that they did was they announced that they will follow the Sharia law, the Islamic State's law. And that says like women and girls will come after men and they will not have the freedom that they deserve. The other thing is that they have announced publicly, they have announced that women and girls should not, they don't see sports something necessary for women and girls. Recently, they have announced that only girls till grade 6 can go to school. The university and above the grade 6, women and girls cannot go to school. Women and girls are not allowed to go to work because they have made announcement that their allies or Taliban soldiers are not trained to how to work together around women. They have started going for activists and and women who have been very vocal in society. They have been searching houses and homes, started killing and getting women and girls. And now they have been very violent towards the women who demonstrated for their right to have education and be part of some sort of government. They were beaten in the streets brutally. So it's returning back. And now they have already started cutting the hands and public executions. And in Herat, they used football stadium as a public execution, who they have used for one of the commanders. So it is returning back. Football pitches is becoming another, again, a public execution for Taliban and a place for punishment, which is like the green pitch where we all, like the dreams come true and people go and watch a group of people playing and enjoying the game. Unfortunately, it's going to be used again for creating fear.
How much of a toll has this all taken on you, Khalida? I read the Guardian piece where I first read about what you guys were doing. It made reference to you having some sort of a panic attack, I think. You hadn't been sleeping, you hadn't been eating. This is a few weeks ago. I mean, are you okay now?
I have not been I have not stopped yet, and I've been working with many groups. Like since we got the first group out, then there's has been many small groups and then bigger groups. And I've been working now with youth team that are in Pakistan. We are trying to get a host country for them that we have not found yet. And hoping that Australia will be one of the countries. But it has been so much stressful, so much coordination and a lot of communication. And like you being the center, and there's the only hope for them is your voice, that you answer the phone call and answer them, because I'm the one that they trust. They speak the language, they know me. And that is like, that's what they count on. So when there's something wrong, they just call me, and then being stressed. And that's why I have kept my phone all the time on, so I answer them, so they don't feel extra stress from my side. And I've been always available since the government surrendered. At the same time, I feel sorry for so many women and girls that they have been trying their best, reaching out to me, seeking for help, for support, and I have not been able to answer any of them. I receive like nonstop the messages, voice messages, women crying, and seeking for help, and I feel so bad. And they are the most educated people of the country. They are the lawyers, they are the advocates, they are activists, they are sports people, and these are the women that they were on the peak of their career. They were dreaming. It's everything is just gone, and that hurts a lot. Because first, one thing is like helping people. The other thing is like being from the country. It's your people, it's your country, it's your nation. It's what is happening to my country is very painful. And that's why, like, very personal attachment to my country.
Kat, I'm sure you tell Khalida privately, but even in this forum, that she's got nothing to be sorry for. It sounds like she's doing some amazing stuff.
No, I mean, she's an absolute hero. She's one of the most inspirational people I've met. And it's, you know, it's a real privilege to work with her and call her a friend. And, you know, we joke among ourselves that when even recently the other day, I was talking about how, you know, when Khalida calls, it's quite often there's a problem, but, you know, it's never easy, but it's always a privilege, and there's no one I would rather work with. The thing that saddens me and that angers me, to be honest, hearing this, is why there are no systems in place. Why is so much falling on the shoulders of one young woman, right? The reality is Khalida's amazing. She's smart, she's strategic, she's incredibly hardworking, she's a great team player, she's a great leader. All of these things are true, right? But why is she the hub at the center of the wheel? Why is there not institutions and systems and processes in place that are helping people? It cannot possibly be right that we're relying on a woman in her early 30s to do this alongside a busy day job, on top of her own trauma and her own suffering as she looks on at what's happening in her country. So, you know, Khalida knows that she's my hero, and that she always has me as part of her team, and I'll always be in her corner. But what we're really trying to do is make sure that, you know, there is a system in place that it doesn't always fall on her shoulders. And as she says, she's still trying to help people, trying to get them visas. So if there's anybody in Ireland who wants to extend the hand of solidarity, I really think it would be an amazing place for people to resettle a country that's had so much hardship itself, and who I think, you know, the people of Ireland recognize much of the struggles of, you know, people and the oppression that people face. And if there is something that Ireland can do, you know, there are groups of young women ready and waiting to leave and try and rebuild their lives and rebuild their careers. So, you know, we hope we can rely on that solidarity and continue and manifest like these new lives for people with all of building and all of the hard work that Khalida has done.
Yeah, hopefully some important ears are listening to this interview. Just a last one, Khalida, you mentioned that youth team who are trying to get resettled. I saw that the UK is somewhere else that you'd like to get them, and Leeds United. There was a story in the last few days that Leeds United, their owners, getting involved and would be interested in sponsoring them. Is there anything to that?
I mean, we are we are hoping any country can come forward. There's some great organization that have shown the support in many countries. The thing is, what we need is not the only football clubs to say, like, yes, we are offering them the football pitch or spot in our squad for players. Yes, we need that, but it comes after. But what we need is the governments to step in and help us to get these girls in safe place. Then we need to get them help with their mental, like, what they have been through. They are traumatized. They are... Football is actually the last thing that we are thinking about. They have missed their family members. They have been traumatized for this past almost two months, what they have been experienced. And even past 6 months, because a lot has been all the time, Taliban is coming, Taliban is in the door. So they have been through a lot. The football is the least thing that they are thinking and we are thinking about. So yes, there has been a lot of media. Many organization is offering and speaking a lot about offering the football spot for them, but we don't need that first. First, we need the governments to step in, get, even if it's Australia or UK, to say yes, we want these girls. We will provide a house or a space where they can feel freedom, and then resettle and enjoy, like, start their life, because they deserve. The life, they deserve the freedom, because they have done nothing wrong. All they did, these young women, to actively participate in society and to dream.
Yeah. Okay, we'll leave it on that note, guys. Listen, Kat, thank you so much. Khalida, thank you so much as well. I hope you can take care of yourself as well. Listen, amazing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Richie Sadler's here. Richie, how are you?
How are you, lads?
How are you, lads?
Richie,
how are you, lads?
How are you doing this week?
I'm marvellous.
Look at the joy on my face. Look how happy I was. What the fuck happened? No, really. You know, what happened?
When John was young, everyone in the city knew about it, but no one had seen him.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's persuaded of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.